Kanye, motherfucker.
Wise men say forgiveness is divine, but never pay full price for late pizza.
Cause you're a freak with a microphone.
I am an FBI agent.
You're listening to the Super Podcast, featuring hosts Super Marcy.
And I think everybody these days can relate to Serial Mom.
And be the terrible Aussie.
But one of my pet peeves in movies, like people sitting down to have dinner and they don't actually finish the dinner.
This podcast contains coarse language.
See, watching this, like, I just want to go and
adult themes.
But, like, this whole movie is just hinges on someone's ass.
And potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Listener discretion is advised. Visit supermarcy.com for more information. Now for our feature presentation.
Listen, sister, if I want your opinion, I'll beat it out of you.
By the way, his testicle retrieval operation went quite well.
White Russian. No ice. Hold the vodka. Hold the Kahlua.
Isn't this 4215 pussy way?
G'day everyone, this is B. Jermaine, aka The Terrible Aussie, and welcome to episode 164 of the Super Podcast, the flagship show of the Super Network. And with me as always is my very awesome co-host, the one, the only, Super Marcy. Hello Marcy, how are you?
Hello, hello. Yes, we are back again. Tell a friend.
La, la, indeed. La. indeed. And Marcy, this is we're currently in the Halloween season, or at least a few days into the Halloween season. So we've definitely got horror on the brain at the moment. So that is definitely going to be the theme of this episode of the Super Podcast. But before we do, Marcy, we have a very special guest joining us tonight.
Oh my.
Indeed. It's a person who has not been on the show before, so he is making his debut appearance on the Super Podcast, and he is also one of the co-hosts of the podcast Pod of the Damned. See, it's better when you say it like that. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, is our good friend, Andrew Shaw. Hello, Andrew. How are you?
Hello. Thank you for having me on. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Indeed. How does it feel to actually finally come on the Super Podcast? Because pretty much you're getting a cherry popping on this episode, as we like to tell our first time guests.
I am well prepared for it. I prepared earlier, if you know what I mean. it's great. It's awesome. After finally meeting you guys in person this weekend, it's awesome.
Indeed. And also, you're also currently in the Halloween spirit as well, because I know Marcy and I both know you're a huge horror fan, so we're all three of us are pretty much neck deep into our 31 days of horror lists at the moment, and we're probably, by the time this episode drops, we'll probably be already knee deep in a whole bunch of films, but we're not here to talk about our 31 days of horror list, even though we could easily do an entire episode about it. But we're going to be talking about a different topic for today's episode of the show, and it's one that I sort of came up with. I thought, you know, Marcy, we always kind of want to try to come up with an interesting sort of top five list type of episode, particularly ones that like center around a topic that we haven't done before for the show, particularly in the horror genre. So I thought, you know, what would be a good idea is that we do a top five of our favorite underrated performances from horror films.
Yes, I was very excited when you pitched the like a top five topic, and I was all in and didn't think too hardly about my choices, so hopefully they'll all be decent. But yes, very excited to discuss and you know, share mine and also hear what you guys have picked.
Indeed, although we had a certain criteria for our list for this one, because we didn't just want to pick five random performances. What we decided to do is that for our five picks, they are going to be in a specific category. So we're going to pick one leading actor performance, then one leading actress performance, then one supporting actor performance, one supporting actress performance, and then finally one child performance. Which I'm very excited to talk about, because I think we're going to have, I mean, I already know your list, Marcy, because you already sent it to me the other day, but I don't know what Andrew has on his list. I'm very curious and excited to hear what you got.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, should be very interesting. And I'm glad we kind of sort of for our top five, like each one is something different. So we have, you know, focus on that child performance or the supporting performances or a lead performance. So I'm very excited. I think it's very clever, Bede. We're smart.
Indeed. Because we are SMRAT on this show, Marcy.
SMRT. SMRT. Yes. I mean, SMART.
Indeed. That's our one Simpsons reference for this episode.
Beautiful.
But we'll get straight to it. And Marcy, you can kick us off for this episode. But I figured for this first round, we'll do our leading actor performances. So, Marcy, who is your favorite underrated horror performance by a leading actor?
Yeah, so this one, like, I knew what I was going to pick straight away. I didn't have to really think about it. Now, like, people might think, you know, why didn't you pick this one or this one or this other one that's underrated? Well, I've gone with something that I think is a genuinely really good performance, and I think it kind of gets very overshadowed by the ridiculousness of the film itself. And yeah, there are like comical moments, but I actually, you know, genuinely feel like this is a very underrated and good performance. So my pick is Mark Soper from Blood Rage, who plays the leads of twins Terry and Todd. So
Did somebody say my son's Terry and Todd? Hello, everybody. It's Louise Lassie. Oh, wait a minute. This isn't the To Be Tuesdays podcast. Where am I?
I mean, Blood Rage has come up, so you'd expect, you know, Louise to show up. So,
well, that is true, honey, but I'm going to leave you all to it because I got too excited when I heard my son's Terry and Todd, because especially that son Todd, who always got out of the psych ward and started killing everybody. And then you have Terry, who's the sweet and innocent one, but yet all of his friends are dying one by one for some reason. But that's a whole different story. So I'll leave you all to it. Bye.
Bye.
Well, I was not expecting Louise to be on this show. So, Marcy, continue. Why is Mark Soper your underrated pick for the show?
Yeah, well, you know, we said Blood Rage. We said Terry and Todd. They're like cue words, basically.
Yes.
For summoning Louise Lasser.
It's the same Beetlejuice three times.
It is, exactly. Yes. Exactly. But yeah, look, I actually genuinely think Mark Soper gives a great performance as both Terry and Todd. And he's very, like, he distinguishes those two characters very well. Like, besides them wearing a different wardrobe and the hair being different, the way, like, Terry is and then the way Todd is so different. And I just think, like, he really pulled it off. He really nailed it. And when he's being, like, a bit of a dick as Terry, he just does it so well and so naturally. You know, the way he does deliver the line, "That's not cranberry sauce," it's great. Like, it's awesome. And I just think his performance is so good that our friends at the Horror Returns podcast, when they did a commentary for Blood Rage, clearly copying To Be Tuesdays, wink, wink, they actually thought that Terry and Todd were played by two different actors. So I think that just goes to show how good of an actor Mark Soper was in the film. And when I did listen to their podcast and they kept saying, like, how much they don't look alike, I was pissing myself laughing.
indeed. And that's when you know you've had a really good twin performance, when people who are watching the film, like our good friends at the Horror Returns, think that it's two separate actors playing those two characters.
Definitely. So yeah, that, and I think I'm just fine saying it, but yeah, that is my leading actor for an underrated performance in horror.
Indeed. But Andrew, what have you seen Blood Rage, and what do you think of Mark Soper's performance in that film?
Oh, I definitely have, and I think, yeah, it's a great choice. It's just, like you said, if it's going to fool people into thinking there's two different actors, like, it's got to be up there as one of the better horror performances.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Even when I watched Blood Rage for the first time, I was very impressed by his turn, and the fact that he was playing twins and he gave them such distinct personalities and also gave them distinct looks that you wouldn't think that yeah, again, like the same actor was playing him, but he just does such a good job. And I think it is a performance, like you both say, that I wish it was talked about more, because it's very hard to play twin characters and to kind of give them two very distinct kind of personalities, even though they look exactly the same. But I think he does such a great job at just playing those characters and just making them feel very distinct. Like, they are two completely different characters coming from the one actor. And it just amazes me.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely true.
I think it gets overlooked because of, unfortunately, the quality of the movies we're probably going to talk about. That's why these acting roles always get overlooked, because, you know, there's always gems in these sorts of movies and people just assume, oh, no, it's a C-grade level horror movie. There can't be any good actors in that.
Yeah, which is unfortunate because you should give these movies a chance.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm. And Andrew, who is your first pick for your underrated leading actor performance in a horror film?
So this was a tough one for me because I went through a lot of different movies and I had a few runners up, but I finally decided on, I had to put in my an actor from my favorite franchise of all time, which is the Friday the 13th franchise. And I've gone with Tom Matthews from Friday the 13th Part 6.
Ooh, great choice.
So playing the third person to play Tommy Jarvis after Corey Feldman in 4 and the guy whose name I can't remember in 5 who does that really weird performance. But it's definitely a strange one. But I think Tom Matthews, and if people don't know him from that, they'd know him from Return of the Living Dead as well as the new guy starting on the job there. But it's an over-the-top performance in a movie where it works. Like, his whole deal is he wants to kill Jason, and he will not take anyone getting in his way. It's almost like two Jasons in a way. It's the real Jason and then Tommy Jarvis, who just wants to get rid of him. And he knows what kind of movie he's in, but he puts that movie on his back and carries it the whole way. Like, it's one of the better entries, and he's just the star of the show. And it makes me sad that he never got bigger roles after that, unfortunately. I think he kind of sort of... I heard an interview with him a couple of years ago that he works in construction now. He doesn't even act.
Oh, wow.
So it's a massive loss to the industry, I think. But, yeah, it's definitely the highlight of the acting in the Friday the 13th franchise. I think he is just a star.
Oh, for sure. Like, he gives a really great performance in Part 6. Like, even though, yeah, it's a different take on the character of Tommy Jarvis compared to the two previous performances that were in the two other entries prior to Part 6, but he does make the character his own, but at the same time, that essence of what Tommy Jarvis was from the previous two films is in that character. Just played a little bit differently, but he brings a lot to that role. And also, I am kind of... like you, Andrew, like, it's a shame that he didn't go on to bigger things, because he had, like, even in that film, he had, like, almost, like, had an old Hollywood feel to him. And a lot of times, when I see him in both Part 6 and also Return of the Living Dead films, I always keep thinking, like, oh, he looks like a young Paul Newman. He really looks like him a lot. And, like, I think if he, you know, had more roles, he could have been a great big star in his own right. But that being said, though, he's still great in this film, and even though his career was kind of cut short.
Yeah, look, it's been a while since I've watched any Friday the 13th films, but from what I remember of Part 6, like, I did enjoy him in the film, and I think that's a really solid choice too.
I think he needs a Jamie Lee Curtis like Friday the 13th franchise for himself now, I think.
Well, I know, even though he doesn't act anymore, at least he's doing construction, he has appeared in those Friday the 13th fan films, Never Hike Alone, as Tommy Jarvis, so he's come back to reprise his role in those films, which I haven't seen those fan films yet, but I'm definitely eager to, just to see, like, him playing an older Tommy Jarvis.
Yeah.
But for my pick for this round, there was a lot of contenders I had for this spot, but I had to go with one that I honestly think is a truly great performance. And it's one that from a film that when you first hear the title, you wouldn't think that it's actually going to be like a legit good horror film, because it sounds ridiculous from the title. And that my pick is William Marshall from Blackula.
Oh, yes.
Because when you hear... Because I watched Blackula for the first time for my 31 Days of Horror a couple years back. And I, you know, like a lot of people, I've heard about the film over the years, mainly because of its very ridiculous title, because it was pretty much the first kind of blaxploitation horror film, like at least a big successful one. And you think, oh, it's going to be like a very funny film based on the title. But when you watch the film, no, it's very serious. And it's actually legit intense at times. And I think what really kind of makes that film what it is of course, William Marshall's performance in the lead role. And I think he gives such a great performance. There's a calmness and also a charm to the character, but there's a great gravitas to the role as well. And he has that great, deep voice to him as well. Like in the scenes when he's just, you know, pretending to be a normal person, you think, oh, he's a very charming guy who's got a great demeanor about him, and you just can't help but be like enticed by him. And then when he takes on his Blackula persona, he could actually be really scary and film. And he also does it again in the sequel, Scream, Blackula Scream, which is also an equally good film as well. And I honestly think if people kind of go check out Blackula, like, yes, this title is very ridiculous. but I think when you get past that, it's actually a legit great vampire film. And one of the reasons for why that is because of William Marshall's performance in that film.
Well, I actually haven't seen Blackula, but I've seen bits of it and heard about it. And he does seem like he's awesome in it. So I definitely need to actually add it to the list of things I need to watch.
And what about you, Andrew?
Yeah, oh, it's a phenomenal performance, and it makes sense that he has that gravitas about him because he was a Shakespearean trained actor, so it makes a lot of sense that he's got that like commanding of, you know, when every scene he's in, he is in command of it, and you can't take your eyes off him with his voice and the way he carries himself. It's fantastic.
Oh, for sure, and I think like I said, if people haven't seen Blackula, definitely check it out because I think it's got more of a better reputation now because, you know, with sort of black-centric horror films being more popular now over the years. Like, I think people are kind of going back to Blackula and seeing that it's actually not only just a great film, but how it kind of helps kickstart black-themed horror films as well, which are still going very strong today. And I think, because it was talked about a lot in the documentary Horror Noir, how much of a groundbreaker that film was. And I think if people are kind of interested, definitely seek it out. It's a good time. Marcy, we're on to our second round. Now, this time, though, who is your favorite underrated horror performance by a leading actress?
Yes. And again, this one just felt so easy to me. So my underrated horror performance from a leading actress is Melinda Clark as Julie in Return of the Living Dead Part 3.
Now, oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. Now, like, you know, I think Melinda Clark in the film is known for kind of how absolutely hot she is in it, especially when she's just got all that metal coming out of her, and it's just like, ugh, very good. But I actually think that kind of has overshadowed the genuinely good performance that she gives. Like, she is really excellent in this film, and she's really memorable not just for that visual aesthetic but her performances as well. And you actually really do feel the pain that Julie goes through as she's become a zombie, and it's, you know, very confusing for her, and all these changes that happen, like, you can feel that heartbreak in her through that performance. So I think her actual performance gets very overlooked with this film. And I do credit this film as being one of those films that I watched when I was younger that got me into horror.
Oh, for sure. I believe this was like the third zombie film I'd ever seen. And because I think the first one I ever saw was Return of the Living Dead Part 2, which is a film I really enjoy because of how unabashedly silly it is. So you can imagine my shock when I watch Part 3 and it's like the complete opposite of that, and it's much more serious. But I was always really taken by that film as seeing it as younger, and I think because it is a lot more darker, a lot more violent and gorier, but also because of Melinda Clark's performance. But That's the thing, though. I didn't realize that that was Melinda Clark in the film until years later, because I think I was more familiar with her in her role as Marissa's mum on The OC.
Yeah, see, I didn't realize that was her for the longest time, and when I did, I was like, holy shit.
Indeed, indeed. But it is such a great performance, and she brings a lot of sort of tragedy to the character and also kind of the conflict in this, because, like, she doesn't, like, even though, yeah, she's dead, and she has the urge to eat people, but she doesn't want it. But yet, and hence how, why, you know, the whole aesthetic of the film with, of course, people know the image with, you know, all the metal and nails and everything in her, is because she uses that to kind of try to quench that thirst by focusing her pain on something else. And she just does such a great job with it, like her performance. And yeah, it's definitely one that I feel like, it, as great as the film is, it's definitely elevated because of her turn in it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's one of those ones. I did see it when I was a kid. I remember the VHS cover more than anything.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's one of those ones that sort of, it really stands out, and it's, you know, burned into your brain that, but I haven't seen it in such a long time. I do remember it being a good performance, but it's been a very long time since I've seen it.
I'd say it's definitely worth seeking out, because I think, even though, yes, it's the third film in the Return of the Living Dead series, but I would say as an overall zombie film, it's just very underrated compared to other ones that are out there.
Definitely. Definitely. It's worth a rewatch for sure.
And Andrew, what is your underrated horror performance by a leading actress?
So I went a little bit more obscure with my one. It's a movie I picked up from Vinegar Syndrome a little while ago, a movie called The Caller. And it's the lead actress, Madeline Smith Osborne, in that role. It's a, I'm not sure if either of you have seen the movie, but it's her.
I haven't seen the movie, but doesn't Malcolm McDowell also star in that film?
Yes. So there are literally two actors in the film. It's her, Madeline Smith Osborne, and Malcolm McDowell. And for more than three quarters of the film, it plays like this stalker horror sort of movie, like almost a home invasion type movie in points, where she's living in this cabin out in the middle of nowhere, and Malcolm McDowell is just harassing her the whole time. And, you know, everyone who knows who Malcolm McDowell is knows how threatening he can be. You know, just watch A Clockwork Orange. And he's just on her the whole time, and it's just this back and forth cat and mouse story. But the ending is one of the most insane endings in a movie I've ever seen in my life. I don't want to spoil it. I won't spoil it, because you have to watch the film, but it flips the whole movie on its head. But her performance the whole way through is just, she's phenomenal in it. And it's a very, you know, scarcely seen movie. And I love her performance in it.
I've heard of that. I'm intrigued as well, because I've heard about this movie for a while now. And I've heard that the last half of that film is pretty insane.
Oh, it's like the last 10 minutes.
Oh, the last 10 minutes, even better. So I definitely have to check that one out for sure.
Yes, might have to be like a bonus watch for 31 Days of Horror.
Exactly. Exactly. Alrighty, for my pick for this round, for my leading actress performance, I'm going with Julie Harris from The Haunting.
Ooh.
Who, of course, plays the character of Eleanor. Now, we all know kind of The Haunting, like, based on the novel The Haunting of Hill House by Shirley Jackson. So this is the first adaptation of the novel that came out in 1963. And Julie Harris, of course, plays Eleanor, who's this young woman who her mother has recently passed away. And so she decides, after reading in a newspaper, that a doctor is doing a study on the supernatural at this haunted house called Hill House. So she decides to go there. And then while she's there, creepy things tend to happen. But what I think is brilliant about The Haunting is, and from what I hear, it's also the same in the book as well, even though I haven't read it myself, is that you're never really sure if all the creepy stuff is happening is actually done by ghosts, or if it's all in her head. And it's a very haunted performance, and I think Julie Harris, like, we get into the mindset of her character very early on, and pretty much a lot of the film is from her viewpoint, and the fact that she is going back and forth trying to figure out exactly what is going on. Like, is this all in her head? is the ghost in this house real? And I think she does such an amazing job finding that kind of line where you, as the audience, and also are never really sure about what's going on. And of course, there's like that famous scene where she wakes up and she goes, who was holding my hand? Like that scene, that sense of terror and confusion that's on her face. Like, it is such a great performance, and one that really sort of she dives into the psychology of the character. And it's just one that after, when you watch the film, it just sticks with you long after you've seen it, because it's such a great performance. Then, I mean, yeah, even though the story of The Haunting of Hill House is well known and has been adapted quite a number of times, like, of course, like the 1999 film The Haunting, and as well as the Mike Flanagan miniseries. But I think a lot of people need to go back and watch the 60s version just to see Julie Harris's performance, because she is so good in that film.
Definitely. It's been a while since I've seen it. I think this was something I watched on a previous 31 Days of Horror list a few years ago. So, yeah, I'm sitting here going, yeah, I remember it, but I don't remember it well enough. But, yeah, I definitely people need to go and watch, like, this version, because it is a great film. And from what I can remember, like, she's fantastic. So, yeah, good choice.
Yeah, it's the same sort of thing. It's been a long time since I've seen that one, but I'm literally adding it to a watch list of mine right now to actually get back onto it. But, yeah, it's... from what I remember, it's, you know, one of those performances that you just don't forget.
Oh yeah, and it's like the whole film is full of great performances, and it's definitely one of the best haunted house films ever made. But I think at the same time, she is the heart of the film and definitely adds so much to it with her performance in it. And Marcy, we'll go on to round three. And who is your favorite underrated horror performance by a supporting actor?
Yes, so. I have gone with George Sanders as Lord Henry Wotton from The Picture of Dorian Gray. Now, Ooh. Yeah, so The Picture of Dorian Gray was one I discovered a couple of years ago for 31 Days of Horror, and I absolutely fell in love with the film. Like, I do think it's utterly brilliant, and because I did not shut up about it, you did then watch it, Bede.
I did.
So, I mean, any performance in this film could be on this list because, you know, I hadn't even really heard about this version. I was just researching horror films from that decade, and this one just got my attention. So, yeah, you don't really hear it discussed too much anymore, which it really should because it's amazing. But George Sanders' performance just really sticks out in that film. Like, his character is a bit of a dick. It's very memorable, but there's just something about, like, how he just plays this character and just that amount of charisma and just very much opposite. Oh, God, I can't remember the guy's name. Let me just look this up for a second.
Is it Herb Hatfield as Dorian Gray, Marcy?
Yes. Sorry, I said it. Yeah, so when he's against Herb Hatfield as Dorian Gray, like, it's day and night. Because, you know, the character of Dorian Gray is just very cold and you know, whereas Lord Henry just is not. It's so different. And, well, kind of a little bit of Lord Henry's fault with what happens. But I digress. I just think it's a great and memorable supporting role.
Oh, for sure. Like, I always remember George Sanders from his Oscar-winning performance in All About Eve. That's kind of the only film I've always only associated that actor with, because I'd never seen him in anything else until you were the one who recommended me to check out The Picture of Dorian Gray. So I did, and he is fantastic in that film, and he definitely, like, the psychotic qualities he brought to All About Eve are kind of in this performance as well. Like, and he's just so great on screen. And it's good to have sort of him there as this the polar opposite to Herb Hatfield's performance as Dorian Gray, which is, of course, this kind of cold and distant performance.
I'm adding this one to my list as well. I haven't seen this one, so I'm going to have a lot to watch this for Halloween at this rate.
I'm going to say this about Dorian Gray, that film. Like, I think, Marcy, when that... because, you know, of course, it's The Picture of Dorian Gray. So they're going to have the actual picture of Dorian Gray. And I think what's interesting about this film is that even though it's in black and white, that portrait is in color when you see it. But the thing is, though, Marcy, you told me, like, be prepared for that picture. And I'm like, oh, I mean, I've seen other versions of Dorian Gray. I kind of know what to expect with that portrait. And when I saw that portrait, like when they show it the first time, I was actually legit taken aback how disturbing that picture was.
Excellent.
So you're definitely in for something, Andrew, when you watch that film.
Yeah, beautiful.
Absolutely.
But Andrew, who is your pick for your underrated supporting actor performance in a horror film?
So this one and child performance were the easiest ones for me to pick. I went with an actor from one of my favorite horror movies, one of my favorite slashers of all time. It is Atanas Illich from Slumber Party Massacre 2.
Nice. Now,
for anyone who's seen that movie, Atanas Illich plays the driller killer with the guitar.
Yes.
Who is throughout the whole movie popping up and has one of the most memorable song and dance sequences in a movie I've ever seen in my life. I unabashedly love this movie. I made Dean and Emma watch it for Pot of the Damned, and I don't think they've ever forgiven me. But it is, I think this is, this movie runs about 80 minutes long. It's one of the, I think if you watch this in a cinema with a crowd, you would have so much fun. And I think the biggest part of it is Atanas's role. He is just, he's having a blast. He's playing his guitar. He's singing, he's dancing, he's popping up. He's doing the, you know, hey baby voice all the time. It's just amazing. I laugh and smile every time I see the role.
That performance is really good, and I'm glad that you picked that, Andrew, because I wasn't the biggest fan of the first Slumber Party Massacre, so when I went into the second one, I'd heard that it's a little bit more crazier than the first, but I wasn't expecting it to be that crazy, especially
just a little bit, yeah,
because of his performance, because again, he basically plays the character like he's some kind of coked up version of Elvis and does a song and dance routine, and I was just not prepared for how insane of a performance it is. And it, again, I do enjoy that film because I think it is the best of the series. And I think it is due for it because of his performance, because he just goes at it 110%.
Oh, yeah.
I can't add anything because I haven't seen it.
Oh, well, you better add that to your list.
Don't worry.
Well, I think it is on one of the Tubis.
I think it's on Tubi somewhere, yeah.
Yeah, so
I think that it's on Shudder as well.
It might be on Shudder.
Yeah, I'll have to check that up. I think it might be on the... Actually, I think it is on the Australian one, but I can't confirm that right now, but I'll find out later. But anyways, though, for my pick, I had to really think about this because there's a lot of strong contenders, but then when I really thought about it, I thought, you know what? This guy's performance is definitely the definition of an underrated supporting actor performance, especially in a film that has so many great performances in it. And my pick is James Ransom in It Chapter 2.
Hell to Ooh, the air.
Yeah.
Because I know some people are kind of mixed on it on It Chapter 2, but I really love that film personally because it definitely is the more insane, crazier of the two films. But it kind of reflects but I think that was the entire point. But I mean, that film has a lot of great performances in it because you got James McAvoy, Jessica Chastain. But one of the performances that definitely, you know, got the most critical attention was Bill Hader, who is fantastic in that film. But for me, the MVP of that entire film was James Ransom, who plays the adult version of Eddie Casbrook. And I think what makes his performance great is that he captures the exact same vibe as Jack Dylan Grazer, who plays the younger version of the character in the first film. Like, he really captures like what Glazer did with his performance. And also, like, when you kind of look at both actors side by side, you would think Ransom is the adult version of him. And he is so great. He brings a lot of heart to that performance, and he also brings a lot of humor to it as well. And he just steals every scene he is in. And it's such a great performance. And again, like, even though as great as Bill Hader is in the film, for me, James Ranson kind of steals the whole film for me.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Like, I agree with everything you said. Like, I think he's just so great. Like, he was so perfectly cast. And you'd believe, like, he's the older version of Eddie. It's just, it's so seamless. And he's just so good. Look, I think he's great in everything. But, yeah, he stood out to me the most from It Chapter 2.
Oh, for sure. And what about you, Andrew?
Yeah, like you said about the casting for that second chapter is phenomenal. Like it, but he is probably the most perfect one. He just encapsulates the role, and you know, it is my favorite book of all time. So the movies, I love the book, and I know there's so much of it that you can't film, especially towards the end if you've read the book. But just the, and like, you know, growing up as a child of the 80s and 90s, you know, the miniseries, the original one, has a place in my heart because even as bad as it is, it's still, it was what we had at the time. But I think, yeah, he is probably the best one. He looks like you said, he looks exactly like the character, but he's just, I think he's an underrated actor in general. Like every role he's in, I think he needs to get more notice.
Oh, yeah. Even like as recently as The Black Phone, which he has a small role in, he kind of steals every scene he's in in that one as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although if you have only seen more recent stuff with him, just a word of warning, if you see the movie Ken Park in that filmography and you feel like watching it for his performance, just be warned. He does some very nasty things in that.
Oh, geez.
can you even watch that movie in Australia yet?
There's probably ways you
say
can.
I will not say anything. I
As the people
or deny I've seen that movie in the country.
Exactly. But, I mean, I love that performance, and I do enjoy the film overall, but I think, again, for me, he's just the MVP of that whole film.
Yeah.
Now, we'll move right on along to round four, which is our supporting actress performance. And who is your pick for this one, Marcy?
Yeah, this one I kind of went back and forth between a few, but because I've already like spoken about a performance in the picture Dorian Gray, I won't go there again. but I thought, you know what? I think this one's a very understated performance because it's got such a great cast. So I've gone with Jeanette Goldstein?
Goldstein.
I think it's Goldstein, yeah. In Near Dark as Diamondback. Now, she is more... Yeah, like there are times where she's kind of more in the background, but as one of the members of the sort of little vampire family, like, I think that she has just such a presence as that character that she wouldn't have needed to say anything at all. I just think she just has it. And you see that with like every role that she's in. There's just something about her. But I just think that she's so good in the role as Diamondback that I think it's kind of an underrated performance from that film, and not to take away from the other performances that are in there. Like, Bill Paxton is just insanely great. But I think, you know, hers gets overlooked, and I just wanted to shine a light on that, and I think she's fabulous.
Oh, for sure. Like, even though it has been a little while since I've seen Near Dark, I do always remember Jeanette Goldstein's performance in that film. Like, even though she has, you know, she's a character actress who's appeared in so many films, but even though it's only like supporting roles or small roles or anything like that, she always tends to steal all those scenes, like Vazquez in Aliens and a few others as well. Like, she is just really good in this film. It is an understated performance, but she definitely does a lot with that character in when she's on screen.
She's just very memorable.
Yeah, Near Dark is my favorite vampire movie of all time.
Yeah, it
so,
probably is right up there as one of my favorite vampire films as well.
Yeah, so I think this is an amazing choice. And it's hard for, like you said, with that cast, it's hard to come out ahead of Lance Henriksen or Bill Paxton, who are both just chewing the scenery in that movie in the best kind of way, but she definitely holds her own, and she's just fantastic in it. And, you know, like you said, you know, she's in Aliens, she's in Terminator 2. She's memorable in everything, and I think Near Dark is probably one of the most memorable for me.
Definitely.
And Andrew, who is your underrated supporting actress performance in a horror film?
So mine is a more recent vampire movie as well. 2019's Bit. I'm not sure if either of you have seen it, but
I have seen it.
Yeah. So my choice is Diana Hopper, who plays Duke in that movie, who's the leader of the four feminist vampires in the movie. It's one of those roles where, like, Nicole Maines, who's the main girl in it, Laurel, she's fantastic in the movie. Diana Hopper as Duke plays one of these characters that it's one of those roles where you look at it and go, I have never been more intimidated and attracted to a person at the same time. She is phenomenal in the movie. Every scene she's in, she is, you know, you can't take your eyes off her. She leads this pack of vampires who are ridding the world of horrible men, and it is just, the movie is incredible. And Brad Michael Elmore, who's the director, is he's made some really good films, and I think this one is, it was we watched it for Pot of the Damned as well, and I don't know what it was. There's just this movie that everything about it is phenomenal. There's, again, a dance sequence right in the middle of the film, but it's telling a story rather than being goofy like Slumber Party Massacre 2. It's just a phenomenal movie, and she is the main part of it being so good.
Oh, yeah, I have to agree. I mean, I watched Bit also for my 31 Days of Horror like a couple years back, and I quite enjoyed the film overall, but I was very much taken in by her performance in the film, because, like, she could have just been the standard kind of vampire villain, but I think she brings a lot of interesting layers to that character. Like, she is a villain, but you understand her motivations, and I think mm-hmm. she brings a lot of likability and charm, but also menace to that character as well. Like, I had never even heard of Diana Hopper until that film, but I was immediately taken with her as an actress after watching it.
Yep.
Sounds like I have another movie to watch.
Indeed, indeed. And funnily enough, since we talked about Near Dark before, which also has the late, great Bill Paxton in it, Marcy, his son, James Paxton, is in this film.
Oh, yes, he is.
Who is also in our favourite film, The Fanatic. Yes.
Mm. He is too, yes. I forgot about that, yeah.
I'm not saying maybe that's probably why he was cast in Bid, but I would not be surprised either way. But for my pick for my underrated supporting actress performance in a horror film, I'm going to go with one, Marcy, I think you're going to agree is a very underrated performance, and you might even squeal a little bit when I mention this person's name. My pick is Rebecca Gayheart in Urban Legend.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Definitely a good one.
We've already talked about her performance a lot when we did the audio commentary for that film. I believe it was last year, I believe, from what I remember. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I think so.
But to bring that all back for our listeners who haven't listened to that episode, she is so good in that film.
She is.
And mm-hmm. I think one of the reasons why that is because for at least two-thirds of the movie, and spoilers for Urban Legend, she is, of course, plays the best friend of the main character. She does a really good job as the supportive and likable best friend. But then, of course, once the twist finds out that she's actually the killer, it just comes out of nowhere. And I still think, to this day, that's definitely one of the, like, there were a lot of whodunit slasher films from the late 90s, early 2000s, during that post-Scream period. But for me, mm-hmm. that reveal of her being the killer is still one of the best ones, because both Rebecca Gayheart and also Jamie Blanks, the director, and everyone else involved do such a good job at not making her a red herring at all throughout that two first halves of the film, because her performance in that as two halves, like, she is, like I said, she's likable, she's supportive, and she doesn't give off any vibes like she's creepy or menacing or anything. She just plays the character like a regular, normal person. But then once that reveal comes, her performance switches gears and she becomes so psychotic, like to the point where her eyes start bugging out and you legit become frightened of her.
Yeah, she goes from 0 to 100 and fuck this shit o'clock. Like, it's no one's business.
And it's such a, like, it's such a tonal shift with that performance, but it actually makes sense once, I mean, you find out more, like, why she's the one doing all the killing in the film, but, and understand her motives and everything. But it's such a, like, going from one performance to another so quick and making it believable at the same time. Mm-hmm. Like, she, as the character, does such a good job at, you know, hiding the fact that, yeah, she is absolutely psychotic, but she knows how to play normal very well.
Yeah.
And that's not an easy thing to do, especially if you are playing a killer. Mm. She just does such a good job playing an unsuspecting killer. And you would never have suspected it once that twist happens.
Yeah. No, yeah, she's great in it. And it is such a great performance that, yeah, I don't think it really does get talked about enough. Because, you know, I love that film. And it just, it kind of gets forgotten about at times. And it shouldn't, because it's great.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
I think stuff like her in that role, I always love to see someone who is actually, you can tell they're having fun playing the role. Mm. You can tell they've just gone, let's go nuts with this. You know, it's the, what's his name? Michael Keaton in Batman. You're like, you want to get nuts? Let's get nuts. And she just goes balls to the wall, just insane. And you just sit there and go, you relish in the role because you're sitting there going, as soon as she read the script for this, this is what she wanted to do. And she went for it and we're all better for it.
Oh, for sure. But yeah, I would say it's even up there as one of the best kind of post-Scream slasher performances, at least in my opinion, anyway. So, but and I think it's definitely due, you know, why I love Urban Legend as much as I do is one aspect of it is, of course, her performance. And we'll move right along to our fifth and final round. And this is what I'm very curious what we all of you guys picked. And Marcy, who is your underrated horror child performance?
That Twilight baby. No, I'm kidding.
I know it.
Not the baby from American Sniper?
Oh, well, that could have been runner-up.
I think it was the same baby.
It might have been. No. Yeah, so I picked the performance of Fernando Tivel, sorry if I mispronounce the name, from The Devil's Backbone as Carlos. And again, I think The Devil's Backbone kind of gets forgotten about a little bit within that filmography of Guillermo del Toro, because it is kind of, it has similarities with Pan's Labyrinth, but I think once that film came out, that's kind of what most people ended up talking about in terms of, like, his horror work. But The Devil's Backbone is such a heartbreaking and beautifully done film. And I think that performance as Carlos is just so spot on. You kind of sitting there like, how have you not been acting for 50 years kind of, you know, performance? Like, it's just so utterly stunning. And it's, I think it's part of the, like, the heart and soul of the film, and I don't really want to give much away, because if you haven't seen this film, go out of your way to see it. Like, it's phenomenal. It might be perhaps my favorite Del Toro film.
Oh, for sure. It's definitely up there as one of my personal favorite Del Toro films, and it's definitely his most underrated film. It has so many great performances in it, but him as the lead is definitely one that is the strongest point, because he is so, like, Del Toro has a great, knows how to get great performances out of child actors. Mm. And we kind of saw that even more so in Pan's Labyrinth, but we got to see that here in this film, and he just does such a great job of getting that performance out of him. But that being said, though, I don't want to, but he, on his own, he still brings a lot to that character that just makes him such a memorable character that you can't help but be on his side throughout the entire thing.
Yeah.
I think the problem that people have, and just this is from my perspective, is that people have seen Pan's Labyrinth and they look at the Devil's Backbone as like his warm up to Pan's Labyrinth, because it has those sort of fairy tale aspects to it as well. But it's a phenomenal movie, and I would say it's probably my favorite of his films as well, because I like Pan's Labyrinth. I like most of his films, but I think there's just something about this one where it's darker, it's a bit grungier, it's not as polished as Pan's Labyrinth. And you know, that's sort of how I like my horror. I don't like massive budget horror movies. I want the grungy, the dirty, the you know, maybe $1 million budget if you're lucky sort of films. And this one is just dark, it's horrifying, it's scary, but it's also a beautiful film.
Yeah. It's so haunting that like it has just stayed with me. So yeah. That's my child performance. Done.
And Andrew, who is your pick as your favorite underrated horror child performance?
So I unfortunately didn't go as classy as you, Marcy. I didn't pick a child performance that is a lovable child performance, a good child performance. I went with a movie called The Pit. And a young man called Sammy Snyders, who played the character Jamie, who is the main character in the film. And it's probably the creepiest child performance I've ever seen in my life. And when we're talking child performances, this one just stuck out to me because I remember it, and I don't think I'll ever watch this movie again, but I cannot forget this child. He's this strange kid. He's probably 10 or 11 years, maybe 12 years old. And he makes a discovery in the forest of this pit that has these weird monsters in it. And he keeps throwing meat into them, and eventually they want more. So he starts pushing his bullies and people like that into the pit. All this time too, his parents hire a babysitter who he keeps perving on, and his teddy bear keeps talking to him. And it's just this strange film that listeners who have seen it will know it, because you can't forget this movie. And this kid is just... he terrifies me, and I can't, every time I think of this movie, I can't get him out of my head. And it's just such a, this kid is a serial killer. He will, not only is he knocking people off in this, but he will go on to be a serial killer in real life if this was a real movie, a real story. It's terrifying. And I think it's one of the scariest child performances I've ever seen.
It's funny that you picked this film, Andrew, is that I'm watching this as part of my 31 Days of Horror.
I can't wait to hear what you say.
You were like the second person I've heard that, oh, you're in for something very insane.
Oh my God, yeah. I remember I heard about it on a podcast and I thought, oh, all right, I'll sit down and watch this one. I've heard it's a bit out there. And by the end of it, I kind of felt like I needed to take a shower. I felt dirty after watching it. Which is probably not the best thing when it's a movie about a preteen. It's about preteens. Like, it's creepy, and it makes you uncomfortable in scenes. And he's just a little weirdo. And I just, yeah, I'm curious to see what you think about it when you watch it.
Yeah, definitely. I kind of want to watch it now. I think I have heard of this because it sounds familiar. Just something I don't think I saw.
Yeah, I'll definitely come back to you both once I've seen this film, just with my thoughts on it. I'm now even more excited to see it now. So.
I probably wouldn't say excited. That's not going to go down well if someone...
Yeah, I say that now, and even then I'll be like, this movie, I need a shower after this movie.
I'll understand if you unfollow me on everything after you watch it.
I probably won't have to, but for my... child performance, I had to really think about this because I had looked online, I looked at, you know, child performances in horror films, and a lot of them, you know, a lot of people kind of are very familiar with, and kind of, you know, I did want to pick something that was, that people would expect, and I had to really think about this, and then I was kind of, then it hit me while I was at work today, and I thought, you know, that will be a very good pick for this for the show, because I know nobody else was going to pick it. And my pick for my underrated child performance in a horror film is Elaine Musi in Deadly Games: Dial Code Santa Claus.
Oh. Yes.
Am I supposed to know what that is?
Well, it's actually two separate titles because the movie goes by three different titles.
Yep.
Which is either Deadly Games or Dial Code Santa Claus. Or if you go by its, I believe it's a French title, it's 3615 code Pierre Noël, which is, I probably butchered that as well. And this is a film that I've heard of many years about, mainly because the fact that it has the whole premise of this film is Alain Musy, he plays the character of Thomas, who on Christmas Eve, he is left alone in his big mansion while his mum's out at work. So he has a lot of toys everywhere, and he just loves to have fun and pretend he's Rambo. And then one night, a killer Santa Claus breaks into his house, and so he decides to defend it. Now, if you're probably wondering, like, oh, it kind of sounds a little bit like Home Alone, well, that's because this film came out about a year before Home Alone.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And there were actually kind of some people have actually accused Home Alone of copying this movie, or at least the premise of this film. But there's a difference between this film and Home Alone. With Home Alone, as the beloved childhood classic as it is, because you got the character of Kevin, who is very sure of himself, and then when he's home, gets attacked by the sticky bandits, right?
It's the wet bandits, then the wet sticky bandits.
Yeah, I was slightly confused. So the wet bandits, like, he is very sure of himself. He's confident. He knows he can take down these bandits. Deadly Games, on the other hand, is our character of Thomas. He thinks he is that sure of himself and confident that he can get rid of this killer Santa Claus. But then he finds out very quickly that this might be way out of his league. And it almost kind of goes for a diehard kind of approach, because we actually, this kid, as he's being tormented and chased around by this killer Santa Claus, we see the fear in this kid's eyes. Like, he's doing what he can to stop this killer Santa Claus. But we know that there are moments that actually get fully intense, because this is a kid who is actually legit terrified, and he thinks, like, oh, I can do this to get rid of him. And then when that fails, like, that kid is shit scared. Like, you can see the fear that holy shit, I may die tonight in his eyes. And I was not expecting that with this film, because I kept hearing about it for many years, and I thought, oh, this would be a fun pre-Home Alone, like, kid versus killer Santa Claus film. But I was just really taken aback on how serious it can be at times and how legit intense it can be. And I think it's also due to Alain Musy's performance, because he gives such a great and performance throughout, but it's a very layered character. Like, we see him in his moments when he's having fun and when he's terrified and where he's confident but also very unsure of himself. He plays that role, I mean, as a normal kid. And I think that's what makes the character so great, and also the performance so memorable, is because this isn't a film where the filmmakers basically have a kid character, but they write him basically like an adult character. Like, this is a character who is written and acts and behaves like an actual kid. And if a kid was in a situation like this, this is how a kid would react. And it feels very believable. And he just does such a great job in this performance that it really definitely elevated the film for me, for sure.
Well, now I'm intrigued.
And you might have to watch this for Christmas this year, Marcy.
Have to do that.
And I know Vinegar Syndrome released a 4K Blu-ray of this movie, which I do own. But it is currently playing on Shudder everywhere at the moment as well. So
okay.
Now, Andrew, have you seen Deadly Games?
I definitely have, and it's one of those people talk about the subgenre of kids in peril, but unlike Home Alone, it's not comedic. It's not, you're not there for a good time. There's no, people, getting hit in the head with paint cans and tarantulas crawling on them. It's a bit more intense than that, and the kid is a great actor, because you feel for him and you feel that fear that he's going through.
Oh, for sure. Like, he just brings so much to that performance. And it's kind of strange to me. Like, I'm looking up his Wikipedia page now. This was only one of three acting gigs that he did. Like, he did another film called The Passage, like about three years prior, then an episode of a TV show, and then that was it. But interesting though, Iz now works as a visual effects supervisor, and in recent years he has worked on films such as Avatar, Black Widow, The Suicide Squad, and The Batman.
Well, oh wow. Go.
So he's definitely did a lot since this movie, at least behind the scenes anyway, so.
Well, good for him.
Exactly. I suppose, like, when you make a film like Deadly Games and go through much as his character does in this film, I probably would want to quit acting too if I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, then.
that's our list. And I have to say, for all of our lists are actually legit really good lists. Like, we all picked really good choices for our individual categories.
Mm. All different choices. Clearly, I need to watch more movies. but yeah, no, definitely enjoyed listening to you guys talk about your picks, and I like talking about mine.
Indeed.
Yeah, it was a blast. It's good to hear the range of the films too. It's not just we did all this type of horror or this or this. It was, you know, it's a bit more eclectic.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I think that's what's great about it. And also seeing that these are performances that we consider as underrated. And maybe a lot of our listeners who are listening to this episode right now haven't seen most of the films we have talked about. And if you haven't, definitely seek out these films. I think you'll definitely get a lot out of them. Yeah. And hopefully you might agree with some of the performances we've talked about tonight.
For sure. For
Just
sure.
don't send me hate mail. Well, that's Party Massacre 2.
I mean, people are probably going to send me a hate mail anyway because, you know, I'm the terrible Australian. So that's just a given.
Yeah, it really is.
But yeah, I guess that could be a wrap on this episode of the Super Podcast. Thank you, Marcy, for always being a truly awesome co-host, as per usual.
You're welcome.
And also, thank you, Andrew, for coming on the show and talking about these performances with us.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for having me on. Always happy to talk more horror.
Definitely.
We'll keep that in mind.
Exactly. And Marcy, where can people find us on the internet this week?
Yes, well, each and every week, you can head to supermarcy.com. All your information for everything is there, which hopefully I'd assume is available in the show notes, but you can just type it in. And if you want to just have a one-click destination for all the links, head to our link tree, which is linktr.ee/thesupernetwork. And if you want to say hi, I'm available on the Twitter at twitter.com/supermarcy, or you just type supermarcy in your search engine. And you can find me on Letterboxd at super_Marcy.
Awesome. And Andrew, where can people find you on the internet this week?
Usually on Twitter. I am at Andrew_Shaw23 on Twitter, where I'm always happy to talk more horror, as always. And on Letterboxd, Drew2323, where you can see the ridiculous movies that I seem to keep watching.
And if people were to find me personally, they can find me on my Twitter page at twitter.com/BedeJermine, and that is BedeJermyn. And also, you can follow my official Twitter account for my upcoming solo podcast, which will be premiering at the end of October, which, of course, is Bede versus the Living Dead. You can follow it there at BedeVSTLD. And also, you can find me at Letterboxd at letterboxd.com/BedeJermine, where you can find all my mini reviews of all the films I'm watching as part of my 31 Days of Horror this year. And also, you can find all my work over at supermarcy.com with all my reviews and columns.
Yes, indeed. And until next time, watch good horror movies.
Exactly. Watch only the best and good ones.
Actually, just watch horror movies, good or bad. They're all great.
Especially Blood Rage. That has to be a priority for
everyone. That is, actually. Yes.
Yep.
But so we hope everyone enjoyed this episode, and we'll see you all later. See everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Now it's time for the fun part.
Oh, me to the floor, let me twice five roll. Well, I'm an inch off the ground, the speakers all around, baby. Baby, do you like my sound? Let's buzz. Let's buzz. I got a rather large amount in a Swiss bank account. I got a penthouse at the Ritz. I bought it with my hits. I got a castle in Spain. I live in play, baby.
You
so much money, it's a shame. Let's buzz. Well, I will rock you in the cradle till you scream for more, baby. Tell me what you waiting for.
Guys, out there.
Let's buzz.
No,
let's buzz. Well, let's buzz. Oh, why?
The Super Network is proudly sponsored by Surfshark VPN. Why would you have a VPN in this day and age? Well, a lot of people are quite concerned about tracking and their online privacy, and using a VPN ensures that you are safe and secure online. Surfshark VPN provides a lot of extra added layers of security, as well as ad blocker and a kill switch if your information is ever compromised. A great bonus feature with having Surfshark is something is not available on your streaming service in your country. You just pop on that Surfshark VPN and you can probably find so much more streaming in different countries. If you want to find something like Masters of Horror, it is available on Tubi. So just select the correct country and you'll be able to watch such a great and fantastic show. Surfshark VPN is one of the most reliable and cheapest of the VPNs out there, with up to 81% off offer when you subscribe for 24 months. Please use the link surfshark.deals/supernetwork to take advantage of this amazing deal. You can also find the link in the show notes. Thank you, Surfshark. Surfy Shark, do 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 do. Surfy Shark, do 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 do. And now back to the show.